7 years in military prison after leaking a trove of documents about Iraq and Afghan wars to WikiLeaks in 2010, now running for the U.S. Senate in Maryland. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59, and coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Peace Jam Northwest on Saturday, April 7th and Sunday, April 8th at the Erb Memorial Union on the University of Oregon campus in Eugene. Open to teens of age 14 to 18, the Peace Jam Conference will include several addresses by Dr. Shireen Ebadi, the first woman ever to become a judge in Iran and the first Muslim woman to win the Peace Prize. There will also be service projects, workshops in leadership, civic engagement, peace building, and more. Again, that's the Peace Jam Northwest on Saturday, April 7th, and Sunday, April 8th, at the Erb Memorial Union on the University of Oregon campus in Eugene. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Thank you, KBOO members, for supporting this great station, and you can apply today to join our board of directors to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to great use. The role played by our KBOO Board of Directors is essential. It's a great way to become part of the team that is guiding our daily work and representing the interests and visions of all our members. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application, or stop by the station to pick up a paper copy. The deadline to apply is April 16th. 2018. We need folks who love KBOO and are committed to our community values. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
Hey, good morning, Abraham. Yeah. It's good to see you.
Joseph, you're looking well, sir.
We're very formal today.
Yes, we are.
Yes, and we are Abe and Joe. That's Abe, I'm Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And the program is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Yes, by the transitive property of talk show naming.
Naming, yes, the magical naming. The magical naming process in which the angel of death comes down and doesn't touch us.
Wow, it got really weird.
I know. It got weird all of a sudden. 231-8187 is the number to call. We'd love to hear from you. But first, I think, Abe, you maybe want to talk about one of our great heroes.
One of our great heroes. A great American.
A great American.
Make Americans like him anymore.
Thank God.
Talking, of course, about the new National Security Advisor, John Bolton.
Never saw a war he didn't like.
Never. That's true, actually. That's true. So that's going to be the primary focus of our conversation today. But on Saturday, there transpired all across the country, even across the world, a remarkable series of demonstrations and marches in favor of gun control legislation.
Yeah.
Or perhaps more accurately, marches against people, specifically kids, being shot while they're at school. Worthy cause if there ever was one.
Oh, I don't know. And a few dead children is kind of a...
That's not funny.
Yeah.
Okay. I could not make the march here in Portland. I had a previous commitment. I couldn't make it. Joe, you couldn't make it either. Is that right? So neither of us were at this march, but I understand it was pretty remarkable. So we would like to hear from you, our listeners who were there, who took part in this in some way, to let us know what it was like and what you took away from that experience.
Yeah, because the media coverage was kind of sparse, I thought.
Yeah, the media coverage was kind of sparse.
They didn't interrupt. None of the major channels interrupted their programming of... golf or whatever to talk about it.
Yeah, and I noticed the national media sources undersold the number of people who took part.
Is that right?
Yeah. But reports claimed that there were 800,000 who marched in D.C. alone. Uh-huh. So I saw some national media outlets with headlines that said things like hundreds of thousands demonstrate across the country.
Well, that's true.
Well, it's true, yes. But I'm guessing if you had 800K in D.C., that probably you're going to be in the millions nationwide. So it's okay to say millions of people.
Yes, right.
But I'm not sure exactly why they shy. Well, no, I take that back. I know exactly why they shy away from saying that. But
that's because they're shy.
That's because they're shy. As we mentioned at the outset, Trump's latest casualty, employment casualty, is National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, who is out the door.
Yeah, it's weird because he's like a classic military hawk.
Yeah, a classic military hawk. But compared to his replacement, he's Timothy Leary.
Yeah, well, he actually counts, you know, he actually counts... Timothy Leary. He actually counts the number of troops we have and what it will cost to do a war and so on, because he's a general.
Yeah.
But he's gone.
So John Bolton, you probably heard his name before. Most recently during, I would imagine, during the administration of Bush the Dumber. Sorry, Mom. My mom doesn't like it when I say that.
Oh, why does she not like
it? She wants me to be nice. She wants to be nicer on the air.
Why would we want to be nice?
I don't know.
We're going to hell in a handbasket and we're supposed to be nice?
Yeah.
I like your mom, but she's wrong.
Okay. John Bolton has been a war hawk pretty much all of his public life.
And he's got a mustache, which almost didn't get him the job.
Yeah. And when I say war hawk, that's really underselling his position. This guy maintains to this day that the invasion of Iraq and the disposition of Saddam Hussein was a good idea. Doesn't see any downside from any of that. But I want to go back a little bit farther in his diplomatic career because it has a direct bearing on what we may face in our very near future here in the United States under the Trump administration. All right, so we're going to go back to the 1990s. During the 1990s...
Well, can I do a little back?
Sure.
Back. Okay, go ahead.
Kim Jong-il was the ruler of North Korea. That's a family dictatorial dynasty they got going there in North Korea.
Yeah.
Things were bad. North Korea had an active nuclear program, which the United States and others were trying to discourage, but also was in the midst of a terrible famine in which millions of people lost their lives. So the Clinton administration entered into negotiations with the North Korean government, and in exchange for food aid, financial assistance, and medical aid, the North Koreans agreed to scuttle their nuclear program.
I do remember this.
You do remember. It was something called the Agreed Framework.
Right.
Not the most inspiring of names, and really not the most ironclad of agreements, but it represented a significant improvement from the status quo, which was, as I mentioned, millions of starving North Koreans. So the agreed framework put a halt to the North Korean nuclear program. We know that because they allowed in inspectors to verify this fact. So along comes the administration of George W. Bush, and in 2002, they began to dismantle the agreed framework with North Korea. John Bolton was a big part of these negotiations, believing that really the only way to deal with the North Korean regime and the threat that they posed to the United States was regime change, much as he believed that was the only way to deal with the regime of Saddam Hussein. So the agreed framework was scuttled, and the Kim regime at that point was looking out over what the George W. Bush administration was doing, saw the invasion and occupation of Iraq, saw the removal of Saddam Hussein and his summary execution, and concluded that probably their best move was to restart their nuclear reactor, regather their supply of plutonium, and start making nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Bolton was even quoted around this time as saying to North Korea that they should look to Iraq and draw the lesson that was there for them.
Right. And, of course, the same lesson was true in Africa, too, with Gaddafi.
With Gaddafi as well, yeah. But that didn't come along till later. Right. So North Korea restarted its nuclear program. The current Kim, who rules the place now, came into power. And now we know that North Korea has a working arsenal of nuclear weapons and reportedly the means to deliver them as far away as North America.
Yes.
John Bolton is now the new national security advisor.
Oh, my God.
It has been speculated, and certain comments of the president have added to this speculation, that in light of his falling poll numbers, his rising unpopularity, that a war...
He's getting cornered.
Surfacing reports of affairs with porn stars and payoffs, et cetera, et cetera.
Spanky, spanky.
Yes, indeed. The sharks of the Mueller investigation circling around him.
He's very afraid of sharks.
It has been speculated that a splendid little war would be just the thing to revive his fortunes.
A splendid little war, kind of like World War One.
Kind of like World War One, yeah. Or kind of like the Spanish-American War, whatever.
Originally.
So if there's ever a guy who would be able to give this to Donald Trump, it is John Bolton. And he is now the National Security Advisor. He's the most hawkish of the hawks. He's a guy for whom the lessons of history, they didn't really take with John Bolton.
Well, it's really interesting. He is a counterfactual operator. The one thing that almost blocked his appointment, and I think this is interesting because it's so... so minor and yet so typical of Trump, was he has this bushy mustache. And Trump didn't like that. So he was thinking not to appoint him. Imagine that being a decider. Or imagine Trump being a decider.
Well, yeah, we don't have to imagine it, though. We're living it, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
So 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also reach us in writing if you're not able to call at facebook.com/Abe and Joe. You can leave a comment there. We would like to hear about your experiences at the March for Our Lives, which took place this past Saturday. We also would like you to hear your thoughts on the possibility of a war, either with North Korea or with Iran, who is John Bolton's other favorite.
Well, we can do both. You know, I mean, here's the deal. Trump is getting cornered. Trump is, I mean, he's been linked with attractive women who have done various things with him, and it doesn't exactly fit with his image for the fundamentalist community. On top of that, there is this ever-looming relationship with Russia, which every day we discover is more and more of a problem throughout the Western world, so including the United States. So he needs to do something. And there's nothing like a good old-fashioned horrible war to distract. So my personal fear, and I think I'm justified in this, is the closer they get to an indictment of Trump, the closer we all get to an unnecessary, horrible, and brutal war against Iran or North Korea or somebody else.
Yeah.
No, this is really real, though.
It is really real. And, you know, yes, there's nothing like a war to distract from other issues.
There's nothing like a war.
But beyond that, there is a significant chunk of the electorate, and I'm willing to bet a large chunk of money that I don't have, that most of them supported Donald Trump in the 2016 election. These people like it. They like it when the United States goes to war.
I'm not sure.
They see that as a fulfillment of a certain brand of nationalism.
Well, I also think there's some fundamentalists who actually see it as a fulfillment of prophecy.
Yeah, but that's really only when we fight in the Middle East.
Okay.
I don't know if Iran would count. Would Iran count for that?
I think Iran counts as Middle East.
Does it?
To those people. Their geographic sense is a little limited. You know, I'm talking, when we talk Iran, you and I probably think of Persia, and they're thinking probably Saudi Arabia. They don't understand.
So we have a pro-war minority in this country. Let's be very clear. This is a minority of the electorate.
Right.
Nevertheless, they respond pretty strongly to this sort of thing. And they respond with the kind of arguments that a lot of liberals have a difficult time refuting, and a lot of alleged liberals in elected office have a really hard time refuting.
Like what?
And that is the sort of the flag-waving, wave the bloody shirt sorts of arguments to start coming out. Like, well, don't you support our troops?
Yeah, let's keep them home.
Right. But that's... doesn't play so well to the TV cameras.
No,
it doesn't. So this could be a really, really dangerous situation, not only for those of us who believe that it's in the best interest, not only of the United States, but of everyone in the world, that we avoid going to war, particularly with nuclear powers.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Well, it is a problem. And it's a horrendous problem when you consider that the President of the United States is a doofus who doesn't read anything. He's kind of proud of that. Doesn't read anything, doesn't know anything, knows no history, knows no nothing that is relevant to being a good president, and in fact lies all the time. So, you know, you got this weird leadership at the top that is very deadly in the long run, and perhaps even in the short run, and you've got a totally chicken, and I can't use the last part of that, and totally unpatriotic, in fact, treasonous, Republican domination of the House of Representatives. So there's no way to get the guy out in a relatively gentle way, like impeachment, relatively gentle. There's no way to deal with it except to bust him and put him into the prison system. And he doesn't want that. So, you know, so have a war. You get behind the leader. Yay.
But I don't think I need to explain to people, particularly here in Portland, who may or may not be in range of a ballistic missile launched from North Korea.
Because it'll get here.
It could get here. All right, now this, if you're listening to my voice and you're tempted to dismiss what I'm saying as fear-mongering, it's not. North Korea has the capability, reportedly.
But not necessarily the accuracy, and we don't know if the missile returns to the Earth capable of blowing up as a nuclear weapon. We don't know that.
Right, but is that a roll of the dice you're willing to take?
No. That'd be stupid.
It shouldn't be a roll of dice that any sane person is willing to take. And the fact that our president seems inclined in that direction, and that now his closest advisor on international relations and matters of war and peace is now someone who's similarly inclined, that's a dangerous situation.
Well, it's terrifying. It's more than dangerous because, remember, Trump said early on, why do we have all these nuclear weapons when we can't use them?
Yes. And he also said during the presidential campaign, I love war. That is a direct quote. I love war. Go on YouTube and look for it.
Well, I used to have little lead soldiers.
Did you?
I did. I won't say I love war.
Did you ingest any of them? Because that would explain a great deal.
No, I didn't lick them or nothing like that. What I did do is put them in lines and march them about.
Yes, indeed.
But I was a child.
Right.
And when I was a child, I thought as a child. That's Ecclesiastes, man.
Wow, it's getting weirder and weirder on the Abe and Joe program.
Why, because I'm quoting the Bible?
Yeah.
That's weird. Not weird.
That doesn't often happen on this show.
Well, it doesn't often happen on this show, but I read that stuff.
Yeah, you read that there, Bible?
I did.
Okay. Now, if we game this out, if we even take the least harmful scenario here with regard to North Korea. All right, you said they have a missile that may or may not be able to reach the coast of North America.
I think it's a reasonable bet that it'll reach it. The question is, at reentry, will it still be a solid thing that can go boom?
Let's say that it doesn't, okay? Let's say that it lands somewhere in the Nevada desert and just makes a big thud when it hits the ground. That alone would be sufficient to galvanize the War Hawk contingent within the United States government, as well as their militaristic followers in the U.S. electorate, to goad them into a frenzy. That would be enough, even if the thing didn't detonate.
Well, I think it's reasonable that the United States would have to make some kind of militaristic response to that.
Yeah, probably they would.
I mean, that's really late-stage war having.
Yeah, that is.
As they say in the technical language.
Really late-stage war having.
Yes.
So where do you think this is going to take us?
Well, here's my fear, and I'm not sure that this is necessarily going to happen, but this is really very much on my mind. I have children, they have children, you know, this is real stuff. I think that when he gets cornered, Trump gets even weirder than he is, and since he reads nothing and knows nothing, his kinds of solutions come out of some kind of John Wayne mindset, and therefore it is very likely as he gets more and more cornered that he'll decide to distract everybody by going after somebody in a war. Now, it's no longer possible in this particular case to go after either Iran or North Korea without embroiling yourself in the kind of war that isn't limited like the Korean War was, or even like the Iraq War, which also got awfully big with local attacks in the United States and elsewhere.
Well, it's interesting you just brought up the Iraq War, and even more interesting in the context of John Bolton, who was leading the charge.
Yeah.
Among those leading the charge for the invasion of Iraq. Now, we can draw a straight line from the invasion and occupation of Iraq to the dissolution of the Iraqi army by then Viceroy Paul Bremer. Remember him?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one of the stupidest parts of that thing.
And then from there to the formation of ISIS, whose command structure is made up of former officers of the Iraqi army.
No.
And from there to to the acquisition of territory by ISIS, including their intervention in the civil war in Syria, to the subsequent displacement of millions of Syrian refugees who made their way north into Europe, and from there to the rightward movement of political parties across the European continent.
I think you're absolutely correct, and I think it just shows you the unintended consequences of stupidity.
Yes, indeed. And what I'm also pointing out is that we as a nation, and indeed as a world, we have yet to come to a final reckoning with the enormous folly that was the invasion of Iraq.
Yes.
We are going to be dealing with the fallout of that horrendous decision, which I think ranks among the very worst foreign policy decisions that the United States has ever taken. We're going to be dealing with that. We're now into our second decade of dealing with that problem.
So there'll be fallout from the fallout.
Fallout from the fallout. Let's go to the phones. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was at the March for Our Lives this weekend, and
nice.
Just talk about that for a quick second.
Yeah, cheer us up, man. We need that.
Yeah, it was positive. On one hand, it was positive to see all the people out. I got to the when we got to the square, it took probably an hour to go from northeast or northwest 8th and the park blocks all the way up to the square because of so many people, and couldn't really hear what was going on the stage, so didn't stay for that. But here's my thought on marches. I've been around Portland for 30 years. I marched at the WTO. I've marched and marched and marched. And if marches worked, we'd have a perfect world. So why is it whenever we ever think of anything as a response, the only response I ever hear is, let's march. And the irony of it, I was with a couple people, and we ran into some friends of them I didn't know, and they were talking, and they were like, yeah, this is great march. And did you know there's a march tonight at 4 o'clock in solidarity of something else? And I'm like, so that's one thing. There's a guy, Gene Sharp, wrote 198 Methods of Nonviolent Resistance in Action. Marches is one of them.
Right, right.
And it seems like for the Portland community and maybe for most of the United States these days, that's about us. And there's other things to do. And my history of watching marches is they don't work.
Well, I'm not sure that you can abstractly say and absolutely say marches don't work. For
sure,
example,
I don't want to.
Well,
right,
they're limited. Like, they're very limited in their impact. When I was a youth, back in 1961, let's say, I was privileged to be one of the people creating the first band, the Bomb Marches, in Portland. And the first one was like 500 people. And the second one, which took place about 6 months later, had more than a couple thousand. And in each case, we had to fight hard with the police, not physically, but arguing, to let us get into the street. They wanted to have the buses being parallel to us and so on. But those broke a kind of assumption about political action. And that happened all over the country. That happened all over Europe. It was really important that people see that there was an alternative, rational culture frightened by the very real danger of above-ground nuclear testing and so on. And I think in that case, it was very, very valuable. Now, it's just not just because I was invested in it, but because I think that's true. Sometimes marches can be an element of creating a public perception correctly, that there is really valid reasons not to do a thing. And I would
look
at the labor movement.
Let me just point out, you just brought up 1961, your march of 200 people to ban the bomb.
500.
Have we banned the bomb?
We don't test above ground.
Okay.
That's about the only thing we accomplished. I agree. You know, and we didn't, and we haven't had World War III, so.
I also just want to say, and then I'm going to get off, because but two things was, one, I've been involved 30 years as an activist, and one of the things I learned early on and really believe is that these things, geopolitical matters, is like we have no idea what's really going on. Abe goes over his history of the war. That's one view. You know, you could probably have 10 other views, and you try to boil it down to one reason, and there's hundreds of reasons. And what I look at is, you know, what are we doing? You know, what are we doing? Not what is everybody else doing? Because I can't control whether Trump appoints Bolton or Bolton who he is or whatever. And from an observer standpoint, when we sit here and waste all our time talking about it, it's like talking about something we have no influence on. God grant me the serenity to change the things I can, to have the wisdom to know what I can't, and to know the difference, whatever that prayer is, you know? Because if you can't do anything about it...
Isn't that the drunk's prayer?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a prayer. I don't know if it's just the drunk's prayer, but it's a prayer.
I'm being sarcastic. Like, don't pay any attention to me.
Yeah. But if you can't do anything about it, what's the point? And then I'm going to say my last point. I called last week about... This week you talk about Russia and the problems with Russia and how it's kind of leading in these things that are leading towards war. Pinching Trump in is leading towards war just so he can get out a new political agenda. And yet when I call in and talk about, hey, there's not much there in the there about Russia, you guys essentially hung up on me because you wanted to, your agenda is, there's a lot there in Russia. You even brought it up today.
Well, that's not our agenda. That's our belief.
We disagreed with you, and yes, we did hang up. You're right.
So that belief leads to that belief. Your belief of Russian fear leads to your attacking Trump, and your attacking Trump leads to Trump deciding wars, an out. You know, an option. You don't see your connection to leading towards war.
Wait a minute. I don't quite follow your logic there. First of all, the reason why you were dumped last time was because both Abe and I, in consensus, really are convinced of Russian involvement all over, not just in the United States, but all over the world, meddling in the democracies that exist. That was just a, if you will, an editorial decision. The other question.
Absolutely.
Well, wait. Let me finish.
Who doesn't doubt? Every superpower does it. We do it. You do it. Britain does it. Israel does it. To think that Russia's over there, not out there in the world, being an actualized entity of pushing forth their interest, whatever they may be.
If somebody is meddling in the electoral process of the United States, I want that to stop, whether that's a foreign power or a domestic power.
Or whether or not we're guilty of it as well. I don't mind the hypocrisy involved. I have a very simple view. I do not want a foreign power, particularly a foreign power with ambitions such as those of Putin, messing with our politics. Because in this case, I'm pretty sure that in a very tight election, that Russian meddling may very well, I can't say it did, but it may very well have produced this jerk as president.
Sure. I will agree. Who would not agree that we don't want foreigners meddling in our elections?
I don't know.
It sounds like maybe you don't agree.
I agree 100%.
Then what is your problem with our reporting on this and our commentating on this?
Here's the difference. I'll hang up.
Okay.
It's the degree of focus, and I just want to ask you this. You focused on this for the last year or two, or however long we've been doing this, since it's come up in October, I'm sure. How much have you focused on domestically stolen elections since 2000 that seem to keep happening and probably are the reason Trump did this? The only people who challenge these elections are the Green Party. We were challenged them in 2004. We actually challenged the seating of the Electoral College. You know, there's domestic thefts going on elections left and right.
So you want us to pay more attention to the degenerate processes that are a failed part of the U.S. Constitution and modern politics than to pay attention to this foreign impact. Is that what you're saying, basically?
It's not an either or. Talk about Russia, but when you focus on that to the detriment of what's going on domestically, Trump's in there because it was stolen by Republicans who steal elections domestically.
Yes, and we have commented on that. And listen, to answer your earlier question, how much time have we devoted to that since 2000? I don't know exactly, but I feel confident in saying literally dozens of on-air hours have been devoted to various forms of election meddling, from disenfranchisement to the Russians. And so, you know, your accusation that we're focusing on the Russia issue to the detriment of all these other things, I don't think holds up.
And I'm going to add one other thing. The Green Party, just like Nader in his effort, has not produced any kind of successful left-wing movement, number one. Number two, it has been used, not intentionally, but inevitably, to make the elections of relatively, I say relatively liberal candidates less likely. And in the case of this most recent election, we now know that the Russians poured a lot of effort, a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of operative effort in creating a set of dissents within the...
Who's next? Good morning.
Hey, guys. I just want to say that I agree that I think April, because if you look back in history, April is when a lot of things happen that you don't want to happen.
Well, the flowers bloom. I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's stay on the topic. Flowers do bloom, so let's just put it this way. If we all go, Earth will take care of itself.
Actually, that was a reference to Mao Zedong, who said, let every flower bloom, and then when they bloomed, he cut the heads off.
Oh, well.
Never mind.
Yeah, don't go there. All right, so, Abe, I want to correct Abe on one thing. You said that the Syria was a civil war, and I've been doing a lot of research on that, and that is just not true.
Okay.
These is a Western, and the whole Arab Spring is a Western-inspired way to shake up the Middle East, try to make their power play. They realized that, you know, the world was changing and they had to do something. So let's just call it what it is. It's a Western-inspired intervention with using mercenaries. And
that's not entirely accurate either. I characterized what has happened in Syria as a civil war because you had two groups of Syrians fighting each other, one affiliated with the regime, the other a faction of rebels. Was there Western intervention in this situation? There absolutely was.
And but Russian intervention and Turkish intervention. And
I don't think describing it as the civil war is fundamentally inaccurate.
Well, a civil war is when you have a significant portion of the population that is joining, you know, a side, and that's just not the case at all. I mean, the majority of the so-called quote-unquote rebels are foreigners. There
wait! You're not
Syrians.
Are you really saying that the movement that was in Egypt and elsewhere was somehow an American invention?
I didn't say American, but...
Well, foreign invention.
Lots of meddling. But, no, I mean, look, at the Muslim Brotherhood has a lot to do with what's going on. Okay, so the Muslim Brotherhood, if you go back in history, that was set up by the West, and it still has, you know, influence into that. So
wait, wait a minute. I don't know enough about that. Let me say this. I don't know enough about the Muslim Brotherhood to be sure that I'm right, but my memory of the Muslim Brotherhood is that it's fundamentalist, that is very influenced by very conservative or even reactionary Islam, that it is a religious movement, and that, for example, it killed the leadership of Egypt, and most of its leadership at one point was put in jail. I don't see that as a role played by the United States.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, the Muslim Brotherhood is more of a role played in some part by Germans and by some part the British, who are...
Wait, why do you say that?
I don't want to get distracted into this, but I think you just go back and look at the how it was formed, how it was...
Okay, I'm really ignorant about this, so I can't argue with you.
True. I'm not that articulate with all the facts either, so yeah. I feel like let's just leave it there.
Okay, well we're gonna jump onto the net and see what we can see.
Yeah, what I do want to say is, you know, I was thinking, well, geez, here I know who's going to run for president. It's going to be Jeb Bush and Hillary, and then Jeb just, you know, faded. I'm like, what? What the heck? You know, how could that whole power base just go? Now I know. The neocons basically wanted, you know, to get going again, but Jeb Bush was too obvious. So what do we have now? We got the neocons with Mr. Celebrity TV, you know, or reality.
You mean Spanky, Spanky guy.
Yeah. And you don't want to get rid of him because I think the vice president is even more of a war hawk.
Well, that's the irony. In fact, if we do get rid of Trump in the course of his career, I mean, if we, you know, impeach him, which is unlikely to happen with the Republicans in charge of the House of Representatives, but if we get rid of him in that way, or we create a situation where he has to resign, which is unlikely, then we do get the religious fundamentalist cuckoo guy. You're right.
Yeah, and then, yeah, so it's, I think the thing with North Korea, and that's a horrible situation. I mean, you know, U.S. is to blame for a lot of that. Obviously, China's growing influence over the decades. But I think the whole thing with North Korea is it's a way to get China to react, to respond. They're forced to do something because, you know, they kind of want to sit back, let everybody else sort things out, and then they just continue to dominate economically.
Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try to end this particular conversation. Yeah. I appreciate your points. Probably we'll deal with quite a bit of them, but I think I want to give some other people a chance. Thank you very much.
I think we need to devote a show to China in the not-too-distant future as well.
Just a show?
At least one, yeah.
Hey, the little Kim is in China now.
Yeah, that's reportedly, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, probably. So the ascension of John Bolton to the position of National Security Advisor, which is an incredibly influential post within government.
Yeah,
within,
this is something that everyone will agree about, probably.
Right. This also represents a trend since the start of the Trump presidency in which those people that he had surrounded himself with, who were reasonably sane, and I say that in the most relative of senses, who were reasonably sane and might serve to restrain his more dangerous impulses. Uh-huh. These people are one by one leaving, and they're being replaced by people like John Bolton, who are likely to encourage those dangerous impulses. Here's Jonathan Chait writing in New York Magazine. From the outset of his presidency, to which he was elevated with barely any preparation, Donald Trump was surrounded by a protective cordon of advisors, as a child monarch might. In return for absorbing his tantrums, they would educate their unsteady charge, who would wind up, after pratfalls and drama, inflicting no more ruin on the country than a normal modern Republican president might, which, to be sure, is quite a bit of ruin. Somehow it seemed we might muddle through. Now Trump is breaking through the protective cordon. The people who joined the government to save Donald Trump from himself or to save the world from Trump are leaving. Gary Cohn and Rex Tillerson are gone. Trump is reorganizing his legal team, mobilizing for war against the special counsel, and now he has finally cast off his most important binder, National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, and replaced him with John Bolton. This is a very tenuous situation we're in right now.
Well, I don't think it's so tenuous as it is obvious. I mean, I really do believe, and I am really very frightened of the fact that this guy, this ignorant Spanky, is going to turn into the destruction of the United States and the world as we know it, because he has no understanding of the difference between a nuclear weapon and a gunpowder bomb. He has no understanding of the tactical complexities. He has no understanding of the alliances that are involved. He has, in short, all he has is really a gut feeling about things. And that gut feeling is supported by, unfortunately, somewhere between 20 and 40% of the American voting population. And it's scary, and it's not a thing that you can discuss intellectually and have an answer to, because it'll all play out in the real world.
Let's go back to the phones. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question that no other president has caused me to think of this.
Okay.
Has a city or a state ever given themselves as a sanctuary destination for military deserters in the case of an exceptionally harebrained war?
No, I don't think so, but that's a cute idea.
Oregon's a good candidate. Not a lot of military bases.
Well, remember that we did have a civil war on the question of slavery, really, and that resolved essentially that the United States government has sovereignty in national issues. I don't think that would work, and I don't think it would be... I don't think it would be a precedent that many people would be too comfortable with. But, you know, you're making an interesting point.
Well, you never know till you try it, and you never think to try it until there's a need for it.
Well, that's the point. Okay, thank you very much for the call, Ray.
All right. Who's next, Ray? Edie, good morning.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
I wanted to talk about the Women's March and about the use of marches.
Okay.
I agree that there are well over 100 different methods that are nonviolent, that are effective, that we can be using. Marches is one of them. And one of the ways in which marches are useful and beneficial is that it helps the people who have been traumatized, who feel powerless, to get back their power and a sense of integrity.
You're right.
That they are acting with their own conviction of their values. And that gets them out of the stuck, dumb spot. So then they're out of denial, and they develop a sense of community, of self-respect and trust, so they develop more contagious courage and morality and the compassion for others. They're able to meet people they wouldn't otherwise meet, go across the different divisions that those who would oppress us would try to separate us with. And we get braver and braver, kinder and kinder, wiser and wiser, humbler and humbler, and maybe angrier and more effective. And also what it does is we care for each other. We find out there's someone that's been with me at ICE vigils, and someone else has been with me as a street medic, and someone else has been with me as a peacekeeper, and someone else is about Jewish Voices for Peace and human rights in the Philippines. And so we start seeing the connectivity and intersectionality of these different issues. At the same time, we care for each other when someone is having their own personal life traumas or is realizing, wow,
Edie,
I was a child of incest.
Right. Edie, I agree with you. First of all, I think you're absolutely right. I think it is a necessary thing to have mass organization to create all of the kinds of things that go beyond that. And I also note that there's a lot more going on the weapons issue than just marches. And you're right. And I think it's, I in no sense would put down the marches. I think it's time to not just have those, though, but move beyond that. And I do appreciate what you're saying, and I want to thank you for your call.
I'm a proponent of marches.
I like marches.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm a proponent of marches for a couple of reasons, one of which you just said, I like marches. I like marches, too. Everybody who goes to marches likes marches, and that is a not...
Well, where's the brass bands?
Well, but that's it's not an insignificant thing. To go out in a spirit of fellowship and in solidarity with your fellow citizens, demonstrating and proclaiming your passionate commitment to a better, more just, and equitable and sustainable society.
Absolutely, and seeing how many you
yes,
are.
Yes, it feels good. It brings hope to the cause. There is joy in the struggle. And, as I've mentioned many times before, it's a great opportunity to meet interesting and attractive people.
That's a really gross reason.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Okay.
Mark writes into the Facebook page to say... here are the closing sentences from Robert Reich warning us about the television presidency. How could a television presidency be dangerous? Because it is solely about marketing Trump. Its only goal is to win. It is unconstrained by truth, reason, or the Constitution. It doesn't give a fig about the public. When the occupant of the White House and the sycophants surrounding him are prepared to do and use anything, including trade wars with China and possibly hot wars with North Korea and Iran, to win a political war at home, nothing and no one is safe.
I agree.
Absolutely.
And that's Robert Reich?
That's Robert Reich.
He's a smart guy.
He is a smart guy.
And he hangs out in Berkeley. That's a smart
the addition
place.
Of John Bolton to this equation tilts things precariously towards the direction of a hot war with either North Korea or Iran.
Well, yeah, and my theory, again, is that as the Spanky Boy gets closer, I'm going to call him that from now on. I can't resist. As the situation gets worse and worse for Trump in terms of the Russian probe and other things, he's going to get more and more desperate. And since he doesn't read anything or know anything, and he's being guided by Bolton, we're really very, very likely to get into a real war. And I'm very frightened about that.
Me too. Let's go to the phones. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Good. So I continue to watch, and I continue to see that what Trump is doing to the media is approximately what you do to a cat with a laser pointer. He shines his thing around, and the cat chases it.
Oh, yes.
And sometimes the cat even comments that we're like a cat chasing a laser pointer. We still do it. And it's just like, it's so ridiculous. But what I think is going on is that Trump is from the world of worldwide wrestling, professional wrestling.
You mean totally fake?
Well, to start with, sure. But what I mean, these melodramas that are totally fake, and they're very powerful, and it's how he got elected. And if you look at, for instance, during a debate, one of the Republican primary debates that he had with Marco Rubio, and Marco Rubio had started to figure out that Trump is operating in worldwide wrestling mode, and this is how he destroyed Jeb Bush by just coming up with a derogatory name for him, low energy. Yeah. So Marco Rubio goes in that debate and tries to sort of fight Trump on that level, which is smart of Rubio because he realized what was going on, but Trump ended him in like about 3 seconds because Rubio figured out what was going on, but he's not good at it. So, you know, it didn't work. So, you know, that's the world we're in, and it's sort of a lesson in the true consequences of the idea of democracy.
Well, you're painting a very, I'm not disagreeing with you, but you're painting a very dark picture of things.
But I think it's a realistic picture, and so what's needed is somebody who can meet Trump on that battlefield, because Trump has the power to determine that we're not going to have a lofty intellectual debate about the relative merits of different ideas. You know,
unfortunately, that's true.
And so, you know, someone needs to do something more than kvetch about it or follow the laser pointer. You know, Stormy.
I actually agree with you, and I think that it's interesting because at this point, the ability to create a wider spectrum of political discourse is pretty limited, and the using of that wider discourse to discredit candidates by foreign power and so on makes it more and more dangerous to do that. And it's a great irony. I know Ralph Nader, he and I have argued a lot. For example, there's no question in my mind that had he not run for president, what was it, 2000, we would have had a very different history. But I'm not saying, and I do not mean to say, that such candidates should not run. What I am saying is you have to be aware of the possibilities when you enter a contest with international or national importance and danger. That's all. But I agree with you. There is a great deal of lack of intellectual thought, your cat reference. There is a great deal of misunderstanding. And I would add, we have an educational system that kind of encourages stupidity. So, you know, you're right. It's a very dangerous situation. But I also believe, and I'm going to sound very corny here, that if the people really get united, they cannot be defeated.
Well, let me riff off of that onto the next thing I want to say.
Okay, make it quick, because I want to get a lot of people in. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's fine. So, I think this is important. So, I've been reading all these articles about how this year there's going to be a blue wave because the Democrats are really motivated of Trump and whatever else, and so they're going to turn out, and the Democrats are at least going to take the House, right? That's what you hear a lot, right?
Yeah, you do hear that.
And the Republicans aren't that motivated because Trump got in, so they feel relatively safer. What is the one issue you could bring up that would motivate every single Republican there is to come out and vote, every single Trump voter there is to come out and vote? Gun control. And what's the biggest thing that the left is pushing right now? Gun control.
Well,
I can't believe it when I watch this happening. You know, it's like, okay, fine. Everybody with a gun is going to come out and vote because of this.
Well, I'm not sure you're right about that, actually. I do think that it depends on how well it is handled. I do think that this youth crusade is very real and has legs and is going to be something which, for example, one of the plans that they have announced is to have town halls for all the incumbent members of the House of Representatives and have discussions of gun control. If the person is a Republican and won't do it, they'll go and have it with the opposition candidate. That's clever. And that can have impact. It depends on how the media treats it. already we're seeing corporations, big ones, backing away from their gun sales and their gun involvement. In fact, I believe one of the major gun manufacturers just went out of business. So it's possible that that particular problem will be addressed in this contest. And in the course of that, people who are essentially going well beyond the idea of having a weapon for self-protection are going to be kind of disengaged or unable to respond, because it really doesn't make sense for people to walk around with an AK-47 or any other similar weapon. It really doesn't make sense.
Not to you, just to them.
Well, that's a very paranoid view.
Right, and I would add to this conversation that the movement started by these kids from Florida started because a bunch of their friends were shot and killed in the one place in their lives that should have been absolutely safe for them. I don't think the timing of the midterm elections factored into it at all.
Yeah, and I don't think they're very politically sophisticated, which is good in this case, because the authenticity of what they want, the demands they're making, the fact that their parents are also frightened, is going to have some impact. I think politics is not necessarily a static phenomenon, and this is a wild card in the contest. I don't know how it'll play out, and I'm not at all sure that you're right that it's going to backfire. I really think that support of assault weapons is losing ground, and only will be something held together by the most paranoid of the right. And it's just something that doesn't make real sense. And I actually think that people can be smart. And I think that this is going to be one of those things that gives people an opportunity to act on that smartness. But anyway, thanks for the call, man.
Okay, I got one more quick thing about Stormy Daniels.
Right. Oh, okay, quick Stormy Daniels.
Okay, there's a guy down south in like Medford or so named Peter W. Sage who runs a blog, and he's got some very smart political commentary on it. And what he said about Stormy Daniels is that what all this publicity about her is going to do for a large segment of the voting public is go, whoa, Trump is such a stud. He can get to bed with this porn star that I just fantasize about.
Well, let me just say about that once. She found herself in an embarrassing situation and didn't have enough, I guess, ego strength to say no, and agreed once to have intercourse with him. Did not, according to her, find it a very pleasurable event. She made fun of him in the course of it. I don't think it's going to appeal to the manly.
Well, we'll find out.
Yes, we will. Thanks for the call, Michael. I actually think Michael's onto something right there. I think there's a particularly conservative white men. They look at Donald Trump and they see that he had an affair with a porn star, and they want to be him. They want to be able to commoditize women the way he does. They want to be able to be abusive the way he is. They want to be able to be a bully the way he is.
I agree.
They want to be able to do whatever the hell they want, whenever they want, just like he does, and not apologize for it. To a lot of white conservative dudes in this country, the American dream is to being like Donald Trump. So they are going to cheer him on for this.
Well, because they perhaps have so little other than that going for them. Yeah, I guess there is a segment that is truly that way. I'm still believing that rationality, even religiosity, works against that.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. Paul, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to get back to the John Bolton discussion.
Sure.
And bring up something that came up on Democracy Now when Amy was interviewing Trita Parsi. And he brought up the point that although, John Bolton's appointment is not subject to Senate confirmation, Mike Pompeo's is. Mm-hmm. And that therefore it would be a good idea to, contact your senators and tell them to vote against the Mike Pompeo nomination for Secretary of State.
Well, I agree with that, and I think in Oregon, neither of our senators will support that, and I do think people should reinforce their commitment to not allow that to happen.
Yeah, I absolutely do think it's a good idea, because, of course, the idea is that hopefully you can get someone in there who's much more moderate than Mike Pompeo, who's going to be more of a yes man to Trump and Bolton.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think even a thoughtful conservative would be a good thing at this time.
Yeah, no, I agree. Anyway, that's all I had.
Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance of Pompeo's confirmation being denied by the Senate. I think they're going to
sail
him on through.
And there's also a tendency generally when someone is the president of the United States to go with whoever the hell they want.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, that's traditional senatorial deference to the White House. But that didn't happen under Obama's presidency, did it?
No, because he was black.
Yep. And this also, I think, throws a light on one of the pressing issues of the day, which is the medical miracle that people like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan can walk around without spines.
Without spines at all?
It's incredible, yeah.
You mean...
They stand upright, but they got no spines.
You mean slugs like... Well, I think... See, I think that McConnell is a turtle.
That would explain it then.
Well, it would.
He has an exoskeleton.
And there's even a few movies about him. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Let's go to Annalisa. Good morning.
Good morning. Talked about this. I didn't follow the whole process. Have you talked or mentioned all the countries, I think more than 20 now, that are recalling their ambassadors from Russia?
No, we have not talked about that.
I have not. I am not giving any opinions about what the government in Russia has done to influence the election of Donald Trump. However, the poisoning of these two Russian people in England might have just tipped, you know, might have just been the drop of water that made the bucket flow over. If that is indeed something that President Putin initiated, I think that might have influence on their next behavior in Russia, if that is the case.
I don't think there's any doubt about his role. I don't think there's any doubt about the murderousness of the former KGB head. I think that, in fact, all the worst characteristics of Stalinism,
without the
political force.
I'll listen.
Okay, without the political force of Stalin, is a real thing in the world. And I also think the United States is being dragged kicking and screaming into having to confront the Russians. But anyway, let's go on to other things and other callers.
Well, this has been an interesting conversation today.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the map, and I like it.
Kind of all over the map. I would have liked to have heard a few more firsthand recollections of the march on Saturday, since you and I were unable to be there.
Yeah, I feel a little guilty not having been there.
And yeah, I do as well.
And I will admit it probably has a little bit to do with my fighting against cynicism and losing, and the weather.
And the weather.
Yeah, really pretty petty.
Yeah. But I think it's worth noting that this movement that has sprung up with such ferocity all over the place, led by these young people, it's a remarkable thing to behold.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful to behold.
Yeah.
I mean, and they are able, by virtue of their proximity to this horrible event that happened to their community and the loved ones that they lost in the blink of an eye.
And it happens over and over again.
Yeah, over and over again. It has lent to them a moral authority that I think other people have not been able to claim in this debate. It's absolutely undeniable. I mean, you could see arguments against them just wither away. I've noticed some of the commentary from the right, and they're not really making pointed arguments, aren't really taking positions. They're just sort of policing the tone of things.
Well, they're saying, these kids, what do they know?
They're saying, yeah, exactly, these kids, what do they know? Or they're saying, oh, they're just tools of the left-wing media. That's not an argument. That's not a rebuttal.
Well, there's no left-wing media. It's ridiculous.
I know it. But this is all by way of saying...
Except for Amy Goodman or something.
That they are finding themselves absolutely swept away by the moral force that is descending upon them, and they're unable to refute it. So this, if there were ever a time to bring some sort of sanity to the firearm situation in this country, I think we're looking at it right now.
Yeah, well, I'm buying a howitzer next week.
Where are you going to put it? On your roof?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It'll be a rooftop howitzer.
Cool. You're gonna have a little party to christen it.
Well, we'll drop a champagne bomb on it.
Or you break a bottle of napalm over it.
I think so.
Okay, that'll be cool.
That'll be really cool. That'll be really hot. Okay.
So anyway, a lot to think about going on right now. Please, I urge you, look a little more into the character of John Bolton. If you're not afraid, you should be. And I don't say that because I want this show to be we don't want to be fear mongers here. We don't want to.
Yeah, we do. I do.
Oh, but only when I think it's warranted.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. This is a crisis in the history of the United States.
Yeah,
unlike any other.
Yeah.
I mean, we may kind of like World War One in one sense, be drawn into a war which will have incredible repercussions and probably go atomic very quickly. We have got to organize, and we've got to fight that, and we got a lot of other issues to deal with meanwhile. So, you know, y'all are shouldn't be sitting on your hands. You should be getting active, and there's lots to do and lots of people to do it with.
Ain't that the truth?
Okay, y'all stay tuned, and remember, this is the best in public affairs, in news, and in music here at KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
It ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of He Moves Like the Ocean, a performance on Monday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Performance Works Northwest in Portland. In this performance, adults take on movements of a child. Three pairs of dancers and musicians will learn and score short clips of the child's movement and then improvise in his style. Again, that's He Moves Like the Ocean, a performance on Monday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Performance Works Northwest, 4625 Southeast 67th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space, the musical, showing March 16th through March 31st on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee, Oregon. Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space is an original comedy musical featuring cheerleaders, rebellious youth, evil aliens, puppets, and fueled by the songs of the 80s. Again, that's Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space, the musical, showing March 16th through March 31st on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays at the Chapel Theater, 4107 Southeast Harrison Street in Milwaukee, Oregon. More